This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hey there, welcome to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, the founder of MrDad.com. The role of a parent is more demanding than ever. We talk to, dress, and feed our children while scheduling appointments, checking our work emails, and solving problems that somehow made their way into our kitchen. But as deadlines are met and meetings are scheduled, one has to consider the implications of these uninvited guests stealing our parenting opportunities. Are we allowing the urgent to overrule the important? In this part of today's show, we're going to be speaking with a guy who's a veteran psychotherapist, a leadership advisor, and a father, who urges us to slow down, to unplug, and just be with our children. The key to parenting, he says, lies in our willingness to learn through our experiences of parenting what it means to be a parent. And I think if you had to sum it up, what it means to be a parent, you'd probably come up with an idea, something along the lines of, well, you have to be there. And that's really the focus of today's show, is what it means to be there. What does it mean to be a present parent? The good news is that those abilities, that ability to be there, is something that can be developed and maintained and improved as we evolve during the everyday demands of being a parent. So if you've ever wondered what it's really all about, grab something to write with, kick back, and get ready to start down the path towards becoming a more present, in-the-moment parent.
Hi, I'm Ryan Seacrest for RAD. Over 300 people in this country are killed every week by a drunk driver. That's the equivalent of 2 747 plane crashes every single week. And the problem isn't going away unless we all do our part to stop it. So if you see someone who's about to drive after drinking, get the keys. Don't leave it up to anyone else. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. My guest for this part of today's show is Timothy Dukes, who's the author of The Present Parent Handbook, 26 Simple Tools to Discover That This Moment, This Action, This Thought, This Feeling is Exactly Why I Am Here. Timothy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Armin. Thank you for having me.
Why don't we start off with, let's get your definition of being present. It seems like a simple enough concept, but there's more to it than that.
There is more to it. There's the book was inspired, I think, 25 years ago, right when I was finishing my doctoral dissertation and having a baby. And what I realized that in the complexity of life, the beauty and joy of having a child in our marriage and now in our family was also shadowed by very challenging feelings and considerations that initially caused a lot of confusion. And this, the Present Parent Handbook is a distillation of 25 years of research where I was looking at what does it take to stay present, not only for the beauty, but for the sorrow of being a parent.
What kind of sorrow was there in the very beginning? Seems like not a word that gets necessarily associated with early parenthood.
Oh, golly. That's... You know, what no one ever tells us, or no one ever told me or Sally, my wife, that you don't get any sleep when you have a baby. And life without sleep is very different than life with, you know, 6 or 8 hours of sleep. And the sorrow may be a strong word, but there is certainly, in my clinical practice with many parents, they would report the same type of conflict. So it could be memories of never being held by their own parents or feeling under-equipped to feel whatever it is they were feeling or to be able to stay connected with a partner in the marriage and the type of grief that goes along with what we let go of, you know, emotionally, relationally, even socially when we welcome a new child into our life. So maybe it's the grief. that brings up the sorrow, what we let go of.
Okay. So the book is laid out in kind of an A to Z format, and I guess that makes perfectly good sense when you're starting off, particularly with pay attention. So try to get in touch with these feelings that you're having that having a new baby may have triggered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these feelings rest, or the book itself rests on a deep foundation of exploration and understanding of the ability to, what a depth psychologist would call, living in the question. Can we embrace a moment, embrace our child with these potentially conflicting feelings? And that capacity I refer to as a capacity for ambivalence, to have two very primary feelings in your consciousness at the same time, without one defeating the other.
And those two are what?
Well, they change moment to moment. It could be that I'm finishing up an email and there's a call from my infant. His nap is, he's coming out of his nap. So there's that moment where I really do want to finish that email, or do I turn and go into his bedroom and pick him up? Could be the middle of the night. Could be the difference between parenting styles, between two partners. And the conflict, potential conflict that can bring up. There is a flow state that I think parents finally get into through presence, whereby allowing this ambiguity, there's a degree of surrender that we then very naturally, and I think instinctually and probably hormonally, get into a flow of parenting where it's pretty much seamless. But the joy, the beauty, the rewards, and the fulfillment are there waiting for us. But sometimes most times, I find that we have to make a transition from what we can make sense of, from what we can control, from the world of certainty that most of us have to live in our careers, in our businesses, in our jobs, to a world of uncertainty where the next moment that arises as a parent is pretty much unpredictable. We don't know what's required of us until literally that child or those children inform us.
And how can you prepare for that, though? I mean, isn't that's part of the whole journey, is to be completely surprised by everything?
It is, isn't it? That's a good question, how to prepare. Well, I do think we have to remember at any stage of parenting to take care of ourselves. So part of the preparation is just good life hygiene, knowing when to eat, when to sleep, get enough exercise. If possible, how to take care of our relationships that support these children. So the preparation can be when we're not the primary parent. But all couples, all partners, all families have to deal with, I think, the challenge of being under-resourced. I don't think any of us approach a moment fully resourced all the time. It could be economic, it could be time, could be energy, could be the knowledge set. Like we had when we first had our baby, we thought he had black hair until one of the grandmothers came by and sort of swatted us aside and gave him a proper bath. It turned out he had blonde hair.
Well, that couldn't have lasted too long, I guess. That...
No, but we took notes. We learned pretty quickly. But yeah, it's shocking. I thought I was going to prepare this great big meal for when Sally and the baby came home, and chicken and, everything as it was before we had the baby, honestly. I don't think I prepared that meal for a couple of days. We had tuna the first night from the can. It's stunning, as magical and wonderful as it is. The preparation comes in the doing, honestly. I think we learn to be parents moment to moment by showing up, staying present, and being willing to feel. And that's the challenge, that willingness to hold in residency our child, give them a place inside of us as they are, in this given moment, not as we expect them to be, not as we wish they would be, but just as they are.
Well, does that mean, though, that there's no room for improvement, or that there's no changing things that you don't like?
No, that's another good question.
Not everything is going to be perfect. There certainly are. I mean, that's what everybody goes to therapy for, I suppose, right? Is to figure out how you can stop doing the things that you shouldn't be doing, or just to understand why it is that you're doing something, so that you might be able to change your behavior. So, I mean, there's a precedent for things perhaps needing to be tweaked a little bit.
Yeah, I think that tweaking happens in the moment. I think that there's the contrary is true, that it's important to not seek perfection, that I don't think there is such a thing. There's not a right way to be a parent. What I find through the research and interviews with people, and my own experience primarily, is that you don't know what's going to greet you. When, what kind of response you're going to have until you're actually in the situation. And it doesn't, by the way, it doesn't need to be perfect. Children will make us perfect. They'll make everything we do workable if it's good enough. You know, if we're drifting, I can't tell you how many times Sally would have to say to me, call my name, Tim, Jim. And I go, yeah, what? She says, do you hear that your son's calling you? And I'm supposed to be this guy doing research on presence, and I'm over there at the computer writing about how to be a present parent, and I'm kind of ignoring my child in the process. And that moment is when you start over. Every moment provides a fresh opportunity to say, okay, missed that one. I can show up for this one.
Yeah, I remember when I was first starting off writing about being an involved dad, an engaged, involved dad, and I remember having to get babysitters so that I'd be able to write about being an involved dad. So irony is always present. Talking with Tim Dukes, who's the author of The Present Parent Handbook, 26 Simple Tools to Discover That This Moment, This Action, This Thought, This Feeling is Exactly Why I Am Here. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to keep talking to Tim about some more of those 26 tools. I'm Armin Brott. You're listening to Positive Parenting.
WWE superstar Alberto Del Rio. Take one.
Behold the angry giant.
Try it again, Alberto.
Behold the angry giant.
Perfect. Good luck tonight.
Behold the angry giant.
Yay! Read me another one, Dad.
This is WWE superstar Alberto Del Rio. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today.
Visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Timothy Dukes, who's the author of The Present Parent Handbook, and I want to get into a couple of others. We've kind of inadvertently talked about learning to adapt, which is clearly an important part of being a parent, is if you do try to keep pushing your child to be the way that you want that child to be, you're not going to be a happy person, and neither is the kid. But you talk about balance. And balance is a word that comes up a lot, and mindfulness and balance and all these words that make it seem like it's actually possible to have it. Is there such a thing as balance, or is that just like a snapshot from 1 second where it kind of looks like everything is balanced, but then 2 seconds later it's not?
Well, Armin, imagine that you're on a teeter-totter with your child, and, I don't know, you weigh 180 pounds and they weigh 40. Balance, we could think of there be an equilibrium position between the two of you. But it's not going to be because of what the child does. It's going to be because of what you, the parent, is doing. Can you adapt in your attention and the way you engage with your child, in the way your body posture and your movement, the tone of your voice, the tempo of your voice, the intensity of transitioning? Little side note, our children usually are challenged, not when they're located in relationship to some activity. They usually are challenged when we try to get them to make a transition. So in that dialogue, and you mentioned mindfulness. Mindfulness is a very powerful practice. I started 35 years ago, and it's certainly been the foundation upon which this work is developed. My dissertation was titled Father-Son Mindfulness, The Psychodynamics of Loving Attention. So in these moments of loving attention, who adapts? Well, when they're very young, it's primarily or 100% the parent. But over time, and human children take 28 years to fully develop their brains. As they age, as they get older, yeah, we can do a little less adapting and have more expectation that our child is going to adapt. But that balance is maintained primarily by us. We are adapting our world to the developing, transitioning world of the infant, of the toddler, of the teenager. At the same time, we hold that world in balance as best we can. It doesn't have to be perfect. But at the same time, we're inside that world that we're holding and participating with them.
You know, I want to have you switch over a little bit to something perhaps a bit more practical. There's one that's called Hold the Pieces Together, where you're talking about lying and whether it's important, whether the truth comes out. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, there's a story that goes along with that, a brief chapter, and it's actually becoming a separate children's book, and it's called Fuzzy Buttons. And I'll tell you the story briefly. Fuzzy Buttons refers to a time when my son was in preschool, or maybe it was kindergarten. And you know how when you're a child, you just can't reach him, there's something going on? I couldn't reach him. So I went to a higher authority. I talked to his mother. I said, look, I've had him for the afternoon. He had something to really bother him. I cannot tell what it is. He won't talk to me. She says, I'll take care of it. They went into a room, and they were in there for quite a while, and I could hear crying, and it was challenging. He was having a very hard time. He came out all sweaty, and you know, their bangs kind of sticking to his forehead. He holds out his hand. He says, Dad, I got to tell you something. I go, okay. And out of his hands came five sweaty, fuzzy buttons that he'd taken from school. So he was devastated by stealing, I guess, right? By taking what wasn't offered, what wasn't given. But he didn't know what to do with it until she got to the bottom of it. My response, I mean, he'd already been through enough realization that you don't take what isn't offered on his own and with his mother. So he and I concocted a plan the next day to have a covert operation to return the fuzzy buttons. We drew a map. We talked about how we're going to dress. In that little dynamic, in that story, it literally happened. His challenge wasn't to learn a lesson so much. He learned that. Life would teach lessons brutally, usually. What he needed to know is how to get through situation he couldn't get out of by himself. And being a present parent, from my viewpoint, what's most important is we want our children solving those problems, moving through those challenges, coming to a conclusion or to an outcome with us, with them. The more we can pattern that into them when they're younger, that they know instinctually, emotionally, physically, behaviorally, that we're with them, they literally internalize us. So when they meet much more dynamic and complex challenges in their adulthood, they've had this integrated parental influence.
You know, one of the things that seems about parenting is about getting kids to be able to do things like this on their own, to be able to come up with their own solutions without us there, maybe thinking back to something that we helped them with, but on his own. So how does something like that, helping him come up with a plan to break into the school and replace the fuzzy buttons, how does that help him?
It shows him that there's forgiveness. That shows him that he's human, that he's learning to manage impulses. Some way he knew that wasn't okay, probably from us or from teaching in his school. So the question again, give me the question again, please.
Well, how is this helping him to become somebody who can come up with his own solutions?
Well, I'll give you another example. Another lesson that I would teach him, I would give him a lot of latitude, but always within my understanding of he knew I was aware of what he was doing. And the lesson that I wanted to instill upon him was, don't go anywhere you can't get back from. Quick story, he's in high school. We had talked about drugs, which you have to talk about with kids at a younger age than you really want to. We had talked about alcohol, relationship. And I said, look, there are few things in life you can't come back from, but he and I had talked about them. What type of choices do you make that you really just can't easily return? And I said, one of them's drinking. I said, you ever are in a situation, you call me. I will not give you a hard time, but I don't want you stuck. Sure enough, I got the call one night, 12 o'clock in the morning, too young to be drinking at some party. He said, Dad, I need you. Drove over, he got in the car, brought him home, gave him something to eat, got him in the shower. His mother was aware of what was going on, but it was between he and I. Tucked him in, gave him a way to get back from being in a situation that he can control. And part of the decision making is to be able to teach your children to reach out either to a parent, to a friend, to a mentor, teachers, when they confront something that they don't have in that moment the resources they need to utilize them. And so presence teaches a child moment to moment how to utilize you as a parent. It isn't that there's a rule book that they're born with. Like, I didn't get a manual with mine. I don't know if you did, but I had no idea what to do with him. But I did know if he could reach out to me in any situation, then he wouldn't be facing it alone. And we did that 10,000 times, whether it was stacking blocks or preparing a meal or eating a meal, going to bed, making a room cozy, being able to manage the life around him in such a way that he was successful in small ways, incrementally over time.
I've been talking with Timothy Dukes, who's the author of The Present Parent Handbook, 26 Simple Tools to Discover That This Moment, This Action, This Thought, This Feeling is Exactly Why I Am Here. And Tim, there's a website where people can find out a little bit more about you, right?
Yes, there is. It's www.drtimothydukes.com. drtimothydukes.com.
Okay. Great. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone.
I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Braun, and it's time for a Parents at Play segment. Are you tired of solitaire, poker, blackjack, and rummy? Here are several new fun games that your whole family will love to play. Pinpoint from Blue Orange. In this fun, fast-paced twist on the Spot the Difference game, players use logic and deductive reasoning to figure out which of five nearly identical images is the original. Since each of the non-original images has changed only one feature, when you find a feature that appears on only one image, you know it's not the original, and you can eliminate it from contention. Pinpoint is a great game for just about any age, although be warned, younger players tend to have sharper eyes and are therefore often a lot better at this kind of thing than adults are. The game comes with 72 challenge cards and 6 colored dice for alternate gameplay, and takes only about 10 minutes to play. You can play pinpoint, cooperatively, competitively, or individually. More information is at blueorangegames.com. Personalogy from Interact Games, LLC. Have you ever been sitting with your kids and realized that you have no idea what to talk about? And how many times have you struggled to keep the kids from diving into their phone whenever there's more than 3 seconds of silence? Well, with Personalogy, those days are over. The game consists of more than 100 cards that are designed to be read out loud, the goal being to see how well everyone else knows the person reading the card. For example, if I could talk to animals, which one would I choose and why? And what annoys me most at home and why? And which song would I prefer to sing at a karaoke bar and why? Each card has 6 possible answers. And of course, you don't have to stick to the script. And the best part, anyway, is the why. You can play the game as an icebreaker at parties, a zero-tech travel game, or waiting for your food to come at a restaurant game, or as a fun conversation starter at home. There are 2 versions of the game, a kid-friendly one and one that's more adult-oriented. Cost under $20 at Amazon or personalogygame.com. Fast Flip from Blue Orange. Although the name of the game is Fast Flip, the flip itself is actually the slowest part. Each of the 54 triangular cards has a bunch of different fruits, let's call them the salad, on one side and either a number or a single fruit on the other. Starting with the salad side down, you flip the card over, and here's where the fun part comes, and the fast part. If there's a fruit on the non-salad side, players shout out how many of that fruit are on the salad side. If there's a number, players shout out which fruit has that many pieces in the salad. You'll need sharp eyes and an even sharper mind. It's for 2 to 8 players ages 7 and up. It's available at retailers everywhere or blueorangegames.com. Crazy Words from Ravensburger. The goal here is, according to Ravensburger, to make sense out of nonsense. Players each get a task card with a random phrase. Things like the name of the tooth fairy, the world's coldest place, a dog food brand, or an extreme sport. Players also get 9 letter tiles, 6 consonants and 3 vowels. Each player makes up a word for what's on his or her task card. Once that's done, the task cards are collected, one more random one is added, and laid out for all to see. Then, players try to guess which of the bizarre words matches which task card. Points are earned for correctly guessing someone else's and when someone else correctly guesses yours. It's a great way to exercise your wit and creativity. It's for 3 to 7 players, and since you don't need to have a big vocabulary or know how to spell, it's fun for players 7 and up. And you can find out more at ravensburger.com. You'll find reviews of a lot more toys and games and other great things to do with your family, and an emphasis on with, at parentsatplay.com. We'll be back next week with a brand new Positive Parenting Show for you, but don't go yet, because there's a lot more of this Positive Parenting Show coming right up.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom.
I go to school with your children.
We say the Pledge of Allegiance together.
You see me around the neighborhood and you tell me that I'm a pretty good kid.
Well, I'm 1 out of every 5 children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger.
This problem is closer than you think. My teacher tells me we can grow up to be whatever we want.
I want to grow up to be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry.
There's enough food in this country to feed everybody.
Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help.
Every dollar you donate helps provide 8 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger.
Together, we are Feeding America, brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Now, get ready for more Positive Parenting with Armin Brott from the MrDad.com radio network.
Hey, thanks for sticking with us for the second part of today's Positive Parenting Show. I'm Armin Brott, founder of MrDad.com. Digger O'Brien is a 5-time Emmy Award-winning producer and director who works for NFL Films. And in his new book, he gets to the heart of being a dad. But not only being a dad of a child with autism. Unwilling to accept their doctor's diagnosis of severe autism and the grim prognosis that accompanied it, Digger took his 2-year-old son, Frederick, on their version of a race for the cure. He and his wife consulted with several prestigious hospitals and a long list of shady quacks, including a homeopathic healer who suggested that they rub emu oil on Frederick before bed, and another who referred to himself as the poop whisperer. The next few years were filled with improvisational parenting in order to juggle the needs of Frederick and their 2 daughters and disastrous attempts at living like a normal family. When they were at their lowest point, they threw the ultimate Hail Mary pass and adopted a baby boy from Ethiopia. They just wanted one more child, one more chance at parenting, and their new son turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to Frederick. In this part of today's show, we're going to be talking with Digger O'Brien about how one person can beat back despair and at the same time open up endless possibilities. I'm Armin Brott, and it all starts when Positive Parenting continues right after this.
Peek-a-boo. Peek-a-boo. Smile.
Smile, buddy.
Come on, smile. Oh, honey, he's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah, maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy. You know how boys are.
Or maybe he's teething. Oh, poor baby. I think his gums hurt.
Maybe he's just tired.
Or maybe his tummy hurts. He didn't eat that much.
Maybe he's not ticklish.
You think maybe he's scared of the dog?
Maybe he'll outgrow it. Maybe it's a phase. Maybe he just doesn't like smiling.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No big, joyful smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs or see a doctor today for an autism screening. The sooner it's diagnosed, the better. And it can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. My guest for this part of today's show is Digger O'Brien, who's the author of Pointing is Rude, One Father's Story of Autism, Adoption, and Acceptance. Digger, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about your son.
Well, Frederick is now 15, and he's a twin. His twin sister is Grace. I have 4 children. Guess I should take a step back. Our oldest daughter is a sophomore in college. I have 2 15-year-old twins, Frederick and Grace, and an 8-year-old son. And Frederick was diagnosed at 2 2.5 years old with autism. His twin, Grace, is unaffected. But we kind of had a roller coaster ride in getting the diagnosis, understanding it, accepting it, and then it sort of turned into something bigger when we adopted our son from Ethiopia.
And are they the ones who are on the front cover of the book?
They are, yes. Frederick and Julian are they're almost like our new twins. Frederick and Grace were twins, but now Frederick and Julian are twins because basically they're the same, developmental age, and it's been fun.
Well, so what was that like to have a child who is a twin and you have the other one who's born at the same time, presumably who had similar circumstances in utero, similar circumstances outside of the womb, when one develops so differently than the other?
Yeah, it's very, very hard. And, well, first of all, it's confusing. You know, you're wondering why, one baby is progressing, the other isn't. Is the one baby, is the one progressing sort of a super baby who's progressing faster than they should, or is the other baby, progressing slower? And the interesting thing is, he's 15 years old now, so this all happened when he was 1 and 2 years old. Obviously, you can't really tell too much developmentally, and I'm no doctor, but I feel like I'm one after doing all this. Can't tell too much developmentally between 0 and 12 months, but then it starts to emerge, and you start wondering, okay, and in our case, it was a boy-girl twins. So Frederick, the boy, he's a little delayed, a little this, a little that, and you know, my mother or my mother-in-law, aunts and uncles are like, oh, don't worry, boys are always slow, and they're always slower in developing, and then all of a sudden, after a couple months, you realize, well, it's a little more than that now, and we have to figure it out. And I kind of went after it sort of competitively, I guess you would say, like trying to attack it. Okay, there's something going on here. What is it? Let's see if we can figure it out. Let's see if we can, now that we have a diagnosis, when we got a diagnosis, can we cure it? Can we fix it? Can we do whatever? And my wife was very much hung up on the twin thing, I guess you would call it. The idea that, even to this day, certain things, like eighth grade graduation last year, my daughter goes to a local parochial school, and my son is in the public school because he obviously needs a lot more attention and help. But my wife is sitting there saying, even what was that? 12 years later, Frederick should be walking next to Grace at graduation, and it's been 13 years since basically. They split apart, and one of the developmental pediatricians we went to gave us the analogy when he gave us kind of the big diagnosis, our first diagnosis, if we could go through this. Our first diagnosis was, okay, he has autism, and it was like, what does that mean? And then about a year or two later, we went back to a different developmental pediatrician who basically said, not only does he have autism, he could be classified with a diagnosis of mental retardation, which is simply your IQ level on a number, and if you don't hit a certain level, then you're classified in that manner. And he explained it this way: Frederick is in a car going 20 miles an hour, and this is when he's about 4 years old. He's going to be moving. He's always going to be improving. He's always going to be developing, but his peers are going 40 miles an hour, and mm-hmm. so they're just going to lap him. And in fact, our daughter Grace was the same way. She was going 40 miles an hour, and Frederick, it always improves a little bit here and there, but he was going 20.
Right, right. But that was not your only interaction with the, I'm doing air quotes around the word medical, help. You saw all sorts of other people who were providing a variety of bizarre advice and things like that. I mean, you'd think at this point, he's not that old. He's 15 years old. There's been enough out there about autism and developmental disorders that you'd think that there wouldn't be as much room in the world for quacks and people who just have bizarre ideas. How did you happen to bump into these? Well, first of all, tell us who they are and how you happen to come in contact with them.
Sure. When we first, we're very lucky, put it this way. We're very lucky that I have a good job and good health insurance, and also just based on where I live, really, really fine hospitals in the Philadelphia area. And so when we first, when he first showed signs of delay, the first thing you do is the local county sends out early intervention specialists, and they work with them. But they're not medical doctors. They're people that come to your house and work with him on OT and PT and speech. But they can't say, look, he's pretty clearly has autism. That's not their job. But they were kind of sending some hints here and there, and again, I don't know if it was just from being dense or whatever. Just at one point, one of the early intervention specialists said, you should really get him evaluated, by a neurodevelopmental pediatrician. So we did that at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, CHOP, which is a very good hospital, and they gave us the diagnosis of autism. And the interesting thing was, I don't know if I want to say I didn't believe it, but it was the idea that, okay, it is, but there's so many gradations and levels of autism can we do anything about it? Can we improve him? And one of the, and that doctor that day said, a good goal for him would be to get to first grade and be indistinguishable from his peers. So, okay, they gave us a goal, which was, Frederick has autism, but maybe if you really work hard, he can be mainstream. So then we just started doing whatever we can to hit it hard and to take him to this speech therapist and that one. And we did run into a couple interesting doctors, one of whom called himself the poop whisperer. Frederick has some GI issues, and, you know, that was interesting. Another, a lot of homeopathic healers. And again, like, as a dad, you're willing to do anything. So you read these stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Autism is caused by this, autism is caused by that, or, you know, if you you know, mercury detox him or add this kind of food or put him on the gluten-free diet, and we just kept chasing and chasing and chasing, and several of them, I think, were just kind of in it for the money, and I was a willing provider of the money until it sort of hit me that, you know, A, not much is happening, and B, we're going to go broke doing this. And the interesting thing in the book, I talk about how the one time it really hit me, what was I doing, was we would take him every Saturday to a private speech therapist, and we had to pay out of pocket for it, you know, in addition to the early intervention specialists that came around. And I was sitting in a light near the therapist, and I look over, and there's a minivan with a woman driving, and she was talking and laughing. And I'm like, who's she talking and laughing with? You know, there's no one in the seat next to her. And then I look in the back, and there's a kid about Frederick's age. It was about 4 at the time, and he's talking and laughing with her. I'm like, oh my gosh, I've never had a conversation with Frederick as we're driving to the speech therapist. And
right.
sort of hits you that, oh my, you know, like, you know, so, and it was there. And I think this gets into, you know, any parent, any mom, any dad, that it took me many years to figure out my job as a dad was to make sure Frederick hits his ceiling. And I wish I had sort of known that from day one, instead of, you know, just trying to fix and cure and whatever the buzzwords I could think of. But I put so much pressure on myself and went to bed at night with such a guilty, you know, mind sometimes. Oh, did we do enough today? Could I have done more? What else could I have done that I didn't? And what you realize is, after you do it all, is all you can do is your best, and your job is to have your kids hit their ceiling, whatever it is. And all four of my children's ceilings are different, and they should be. And that instead of just driving myself crazy.
Well, desperation does crazy things to you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Talking with Digger O'Brien, who's the author of Pointing is Rude, One Father's Story of Autism, Adoption, and Acceptance. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to keep talking to Digger about a lot of stuff having to do with autism, adoption, and acceptance. But I also want to start off by talking about the relationship between Digger and his younger new brother. I'm Armin Brandt. You're listening to Positive Parenting.
Psst. Yeah, you. It's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa. What happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just going to keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. If you're just joining us, talking with Digger O'Brien, who's the author of Pointing is Rude, One Father's Story of Autism, Adoption, and Acceptance. Just mentioned just before the break that desperation will push you in certain places you probably had no interest in going. I was curious that it seems to me, and I haven't been there, but it seems to me that if you're dealing with all of this stuff and you're questioning whether you're questioning everything in life, The last thing a lot of people would do would be to go out and say, you know what, we want another kid. You'd think you'd be at a point where you say, I just can't deal with any more of this. What pushed you to that place where you decided to adopt, particularly a child from another culture?
Yeah, it was, you hit it spot on. There was times when we think we could, you know, never do this again. And then there's times where, you know, as Frederick got to be 6, 7, 8 years old, you're thinking, okay, it was never on cruise control, let's put it that way. And anyone who reads the book, in fact, one of the best, I would say one of the best kind of notes that anyone gave me on the book is a friend of mine from work who read it and said, you know, I was halfway through the book and thinking, there's no way this guy is going to adopt, except I know you, and I know you did adopt. So, so yeah, I think the biggest thing that my wife and I kind of sat there thinking at one point, do this one more time without, you know, early intervention and IEPs and constant doctor visits. And, of course, there's no guarantees, right, whether it's another biological child or an adopted child, that there wasn't going to be kind of, you know, issues. But we just decided the interesting – I think what really put us over the top was one day we're sitting there thinking, should we do this, should we do this? And it was like a two-year back and forth. We wanted to do it, but should we do it? Both of us wanted to do it, my wife and I, but neither of us thought maybe it was a good idea until it hit us that we're never going to be empty nesters. And a lot of the thinking in going into adoption was, you know, are we up for this? How old, you know, do we really want to be, you know, paying for college when we should be thinking about retirement or something? And it hit us that we're never going to be empty nesters. And what that means is, you know, one of Frederick's really good doctors from when he was younger told us that everyone needs peers. And he suggested that maybe when Frederick's old enough as an adult, that maybe he should, you know, live in a group home. And of course, my wife was like, over my dead body. And I was like, I don't think so. And the doctor's saying, no, anyone needs peers. And the thing is, you don't want to just have them live in your home for the rest of your life. And, you know, and then off you guys go. And then it's up to his siblings to deal with it. You want to kind of give them structure and a place. So whether or not Frederick was, you know, at an adult living facility or whatnot, we would never feel like empty nesters. Even if he was out of the house, I would think an empty nester is someone who their child is away and, you know, you always have worries and, you know, and whatnot, but they can take care of themselves. And you don't go to bed at night wondering, oh my gosh, you know, are they going to be able to take care of themselves? So even if Frederick wasn't in our home, we would never really be empty nesters. So the age thing, we got over pretty quick. It was like, well, you know what, why not adopt? Because we're never going to see that day where we can just kick our feet up. And, you know, so, but obviously a lot of other things went into it too. A lot of conversations between my wife and I, a lot of, you know, prayer, a lot of hope, a lot of getting up to the line and then retreating from the line. And then finally we did it. And one of the more kind of interesting or harrowing parts of the book is that as we put in the papers for the adoption and we put into this agency, a really good agency that specialized in adoptions from Ethiopia, and we liked Ethiopia because you could request the gender, and we wanted to have a son so we could have, you know, we had two girls and Frederick, and so we wanted to have another son, and so they allowed you to do that. And then about a month before I was going to travel, they sent us a thing home that a doctor had evaluated Julian. And if you knew what you were talking about and read the thing, you would be pretty convinced that Julian had autism.
Oh, boy. And that must have been scary.
That was scary. That was everything. And that was like the whole bundle of the last 10 years of what we were dealing with Frederick and what we were dealing with in deciding to adopt. And it all rolled up into a big, you know, ball rolling down the mountain. And we said, you know what, we're not getting out of the way of it. Let's just see what happens. And as it turns out, autism is not a blood test. And it's, you know, sometimes kids are delayed. And I guess Julian was, but he certainly isn't now. And it's been an absolute, you know, treat and blessing and Frederick's best friend.
Well, that's where I was going to go next. You talk about how he's been basically the best thing that's ever happened to Frederick, which I'm thinking that's great. But then I get back to your analogy about the car going 20 miles an hour. So when Julian shows up, Frederick, even though he's been going 20 miles an hour, is significantly further ahead. But Julian's going to get into his car and start going 40, and pretty soon he's going to surpass his big brother, and then we'll be looking back at him. So do you need to adopt again later, or I mean, how do you
no.
You know, how do you continue to I'm not suggesting that seriously, but you know what I mean, that it's the idea of him being a peer is a temporary thing.
Absolutely. And yeah, obviously we didn't adopt just to have, you know, a buddy for Frederick, right? You know,
no, of course not.
You know, we have a dog, right? So we don't need, you know, just to have something for him to do during the day or to kill time. But, you know, it is interesting that what you talked about there is kind of like the biggest milestone I'm looking at next that's staring down at us, and one I don't want to think about, is that there's going to come a time where, and sooner rather than later, that Julian suddenly gets it and gets that his brother is different, and goes through what my oldest daughter did and what Frederick's twin sister did, which is their own version of, you know, the stages of grief, if you will, the stages of autism acceptance, where you realize something's going on, you realize he's different, and then you realize if you're out in public, everyone's looking at Frederick because he's doing something, and then you feel embarrassed and you feel kind of upset and ashamed, even though it has nothing to do with you. And they're real, you know, like a lot of parents with autism, and I everyone could have their own opinion. A lot of the parents who are kind of, oh, this is, you know, this is my son, and it's, you know, I wouldn't change him, you know, at all. I get that, and I feel like that a lot of times too. But there's also times where you realize, well, I wish he could experience everything, and I wish we had three more typical healthy children, and my oldest daughter and his twin sister didn't have to go through, you know, kind of seeing it and then realizing as they get older that Frederick isn't going to live an independent life, and whatever that means to them. And I just remember one time we tried to take my wife out for her birthday. It was before Julian, it was before we adopted, and we're out at the restaurant. Of course, it went poorly, as these things usually did. And about 10 minutes into dinner, I had to take Frederick out, and we had to sit in the car as Bernadette and the girls finished dinner, and my oldest was probably 12 at the time. She was crying that night when we got home. I said, "What's the matter?" And she said, "I wish Frederick had something worse." And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, "I wish he had something worse or something different, like Down syndrome." And I was like, why? I was flabbergasted. And she goes, "That way people could see he was different and it wasn't his fault, and that he wasn't just a brat or a bad kid." Like, she's sitting in this restaurant watching every restaurant patron turn their head and look at Frederick, who was having a meltdown, and they think, spoiled kid, bad parenting, whatever, and it's not his fault. And my daughter wished that everyone could know that, and these are things that Julian's eventually going to understand and have to come to grips with, just like, you know, his older sisters did. But again, put it all together, we wouldn't change the course for anything, because in some ways, I think, didn't have the issues he had, we probably wouldn't have adopted. I don't know why, or I don't have any guarantees of that, but I don't think it would have happened. And Julian's just been just the greatest thing in the world. You know, we have four fun kids that are all very different, but it all works somehow.
It's a pretty amazing story, and it's by Digger O'Brien. The story is called, or the book is called, Pointing is Rude, One Father's Story of Autism, Adoption, and Acceptance. And you can see a lot of Digger's work on NFL Sports, 5-time Emmy Award winner. Digger, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, and hopefully everyone can visit the Big Daddy site on Facebook and watch Frederick and Julian's videos. They make little videos for everybody.
Oh, what's the address of that?
Sorry, it's our Facebook page, Dig Daddy, D-I-G-D-A-D-D-Y,
okay.
And Frederick and Julian and I make some videos.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.